Thank you for standing by. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you, and you may begin.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Greg Shatton, coordinator for the CWG RFP3 subgroup dealing with the proposed post-transition oversight and accountability arrangements. And I would like to welcome you all to this first call. Obviously, we've been active in emails, but we can achieve certainly different things on a call. I'll turn it over to staff for roll call.
Great. Thank you, Greg. This is Grace Abu-Hamid. I'm just going to do a brief roll call today. So what we're going to do is I have note of everyone in the Adobe Connect room. If anyone is on the audio line but not in the Adobe Connect room, could you make yourself heard now? Okay. And then I have apologies from Avri Doria, Leon Sanchez, Martin Boyle, Joy Lidicote, and Elise Lindenberg. And I will proceed to list everyone in the Adobe Connect room in the attendance sheet. Go ahead, Greg. It's all yours.
Greg Shatton again. I also received apologies from Alan McGillivray.
Okay. Thank you.
Please note those. Well, here we are, and I think it's important time for this group to move from discussing various items of interest to a coordinated method of coming up with a deliverable. First issue at hand on the agenda is the coordination team. I am happy to be and pleased to be the coordinator of this subgroup. However, it would be helpful for one or two or three others perhaps to step forward as to assist. I know they'll get much assistance from many in the group, but with potentially a large group, not only the 19 members but the 92 participants, it would be a good idea to have, you know, perhaps some additional folks to step forward to you know, perhaps take a bit of a first hand at drafting or at, you know, I'll call it vice coordinating for lack of a better term. Alan McGillivray, who is flying back from Busan, can't be here, has volunteered to step into whatever role, named or nameless, that may be. And if there are others who would like to do so, in terms of balance, since I'm from the, I'll call it the GTLD non-technical side, Alan is from the CCTLD side, there may be a good idea of getting, you know, perhaps somebody from the GTLD side who's from the technical or registry side of things. This is by no means required, but I think in the interest of, given the time that we have and the scope of our task, it would be helpful to see if there are any who would like to kind of take a half step forward from the group. Thank you. Please don't all speak at once. I'll take it from that everyone is interested in a reasonable amount of participation, and we'll be looking to all of you then to participate actively. And I'm sure that as things move forward, there will be opportunities that people will take on to act in this capacity, or to grab the pen, or to otherwise take a little bit more of a forward role. So why don't we move on from this point to item 3 on the agenda, which is timeline and deliverables. I think it would be helpful, and maybe I can ask staff to do so, to kind of review what are the upcoming calls and deadlines that we have for our our deliverable. Marika, could I ask you perhaps to, I'm not putting you too much on the spot, to kind of go over what the calendar looks like?
Sure. If you're referring to upcoming meetings and next steps, no problem. So basically we have this is Marika. So we have our sub-team meeting today. Next week we have another meeting of the full CWG scheduled. And the week after that is the face-to-face meeting taking place in Frankfurt. Then we have basically 1 week left to finalize the initial report, which is scheduled to be published by the 1st of December. So I think that is our first immediate milestone. Is that what you had in mind, Greg?
Absolutely. Thank you, Marika. So as you can see, we don't have a lot of time and we don't necessarily have a lot of touch points. We have a week from today at this time a call of the full group, and then 2 weeks from today, 2 weeks from yesterday really, the Frankfurt meeting with probably, for me at least, a travel day before that. Since I'm moving east, I'm from New York. We'll be overnighting into Frankfurt and in Frankfurt on Tuesday afternoon. But if the Frankfurt meeting is going to be fruitful, we need to have, I think, some written elements of a proposal or proposals prepared for discussion. And maybe the heavy lifting of drafting will be done to some extent at that point. If it's not done at that point, it'll be very quickly thereafter, since the idea is that we have a report ready to be shared with the world on December 1st. And we have only one call after the face-to-face for the full group between now, between the Frankfurt call and December 1st. So I think it's important that we try to come up with a timeline between now and then to deal with things. So between now and the next full call of the working group, I think it would be helpful if we move on and to some extent, at least from the documents that are currently kind of floating around, try to add a little more structure and content to them. Ultimately, though, I think it's helpful to look at what our deliverable is supposed to be and how that's defined in the RFP, which I have in front of me. I'll read it because it's actually not quite, it's not very long. Section 3 of the RFP says that this section just should describe what changes your community is proposing to the arrangements listed in Section 2B in light of the transition. And Section 2B is the section that is entitled Oversight and Accountability, which should describe all the ways in which oversight is conducted over the IANA functions operator, provision of the services and activity, and all the ways in which the operator is currently held accountable. The Section 3 goes on to state, if your community is proposing to replace one or more existing arrangements with new arrangements, that replacement should be explained, and all of the elements listed in Section 2B should be described for the new arrangements. Your community should provide its rationale and justification for the new arrangements. If your community's proposal carries any implications for the interface between the IANA functions and existing policy arrangements described in Section 2A, these implications should be described here. If your community is not proposing changes to arrangements listed in Section 2B, the rationale and justification for that choice should be provided here. So, clearly, there is an intent in the way the RFP is put together that there is a flow between sections 2B and 2A into section 3. So section 2A and B, you know, provides a guide to us of what those of how our section 3 could and be arranged, and it certainly provides a guide as to what elements we need to deal with in preparing a response to Section 3. For that reason, it seemed worthwhile to review the current state of the document that Chuck Gomes and the RFP 2AB subgroup put together. So perhaps we can get that on the screen. If anybody has any thoughts on what's been said so far, please feel free. I see we have Paul Kane with his hand up.
Thank you, Greg. I'm assuming everyone can hear me.
I certainly can.
Greg? Good, excellent. Hello, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon. I'm Paul Kane, a CC manager who's been or was formerly proactive in the ICANN arena. I was just very aware of the silence that emanated when you asked for assistance and also the very pressing timeline we have before Frankfurt. And I wonder if one of the ways to try and ensure fulfillment of the task before us is to form two small subgroups, one looking into the GTLD world and one looking into the CCTLD world. It might just help to ensure that Frankfurt at least enables certain elements to be addressed and resolved relatively quickly. And I don't know if that's a way of trying to share the workload.
Greg Chatton again. Paul, I think that's a good suggestion. And I think Alan McGillicray, if I'm not mistaken, is CC Canada. So perhaps, you know, he can be, you know, be part of that. And if others could volunteer on the phone or in the chat to kind of break off into the GTLD group or the CCTLD subgroup, sub-subgroup, that would be very helpful as well.
I'm certainly happy to be have a small role in trying to ensure that the CC community meet the very pressing deadline of the Frankfurt meeting and try and ensure that we have some substantive content for the CC group for Frankfurt. So I'm happy to help facilitate that if welcome.
Great. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. I do think that we'll need to explore the extent to which there are, you know, separate responses from CC and G sides and the extent to which there is a, you know, a coordinated and blended response. But certainly, you know, the relationships with the IANA and with the issues of stewardship are, you know, different enough that the perspectives, you know, can best be discussed up to a point at least separately. I thought I saw Sean with his hand up, but it's down again. So I think that's a helpful suggestion. And I see Cheryl has volunteered to go into the CC group. Thank you, Cheryl Langdonor.
Hello.
So, yes.
Oh, okay. This is Cheryl for the transcript record. Thank you for the intro. I just want to make a comment in relation to the sub group that has been formed right now. I think it's important to clarify what is it that the sub group will be doing. I think the ultimate thing is there's going to be a single proposal from the from this working group, from this particular subgroup three. So if we have in the subgroup, I think it would be clear not to further fragment this whole thing again. It would be clear to understand what it is that they're going to be doing, because I think most of the documentation required are already done in the RFP group 2, which already have done the CCTLD and GTLD splitting. So I don't know why do we need to actually split this group, and what exactly would they be doing? Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. I think that, you know, the idea is that subgroups initially will try to assemble some of the thoughts that are, I think, you know, peculiar to the each of the two sides. I do think that that the majority of the work really does need to take place, you know, in view of, in light of the entire group, but that concentrating some of the efforts in groups that are going to put forth pieces of proposals is a good idea. So I think there needs to be a balance, but I do agree that ultimately what needs to come out of this subgroup is a proposal or a set of potential proposals that cover both CC and GTLD concerns, and not essentially two separate proposals. There will be some differences. You know, clearly there are differences in the way the CCs relate both to ICANN and to IANA and to accountability issues, and we, you know, need to be mindful of that, but clearly what is expected is a universal proposal. So that is critical. I think that we don't lose sight of this and drive, you know, the work into fragments. So we'll just have to have a balance, but I think it is, on the other hand, good to have some people who are, you know, stepping up, taking on a little more effort.
I understand how very important it is to have. So, but my point is, I don't think these two subgroups should work in isolation per se. I think just using the approach that was followed for the RFP 1 and 2, whereby people who are actually the CCTLD and the GTLD work together on the same document, I don't think it's necessary to actually create this subgroup. I think we should just ask for people who want to be part of the drafting, and those who want to do the CCTLD contribute to the same document, and everybody's looking at it holistically. Creating this subgroup will further put us at a point where we'll be finding how to make this thing to become a single document. I would suggest that we encourage those who want to handle CCTLD and those who want to handle GTLD to do this thing together, so that we're handling this thing at the same time. We don't need to have a subgroup for this purpose. Thank you.
Greg Shatton again. Sean, thank you for that. I think we do need to be mindful of overly fragmenting this. I agree. But I think at this point we're actually a little far away. I think we're a little far away from you know, the point of creating separate proposals. I think we have some steps in this call to deal with first. I see Paul Kane's hand up.
So just to lay any fears, the intent is not to fragment the proposal. The intent is to ensure that all of the different elements that need to go into the proposal are appropriately addressed. It's designed as a constructive approach from people that have been involved in IANA activities for many years. Most CCs have been interfacing with IANA for, you know, in my case, 18 years. We're very happy. We want to try and facilitate the transition as efficiently as possible. But the thing that I'm concerned about is Frankfurt is 2 weeks away. That is no, you know, it's almost like tomorrow in the calendar speak, and there is some significant work to be done, and the idea is to try and identify the synergies, make sure that the proposal or proposals address the needs of the community, so this thing can move forward for a very tight deadline of 1st of December.
Thank you, Paul. Eduardo Diaz.
Yes, thank you, Greg. This is Eduardo from ALAC. So since we're talking about process and timelines, is the idea here that, when we get to the face-to-face meeting in Frankfurt, and which, let's say we subdivide this into two groups, are we going to merge them in the face-to-face, or are we going to merge them before going there? Thank you.
It would be my image. First off, I'm not sure that there's going to be a merger issue per se. I think that certainly we should have potential proposals and elements.
Sorry, Paul, can you mute your line?
Certainly need to, come to Frankfurt with proposals and elements of proposals that we need to hash out, and I think we need to, those should be unitary. They should reflect input from the CC and GTLD sides, but it should be each proposal, in essence, should be a single proposal. There may be, at that point, more than one potential proposal based on which variables are chosen, which branches we take down a particular path. But I think that we can't be discussing a GTLD proposal and a CCTLD proposal, for instance, that involve the same variables, say, oversight body and where IANA goes and, you know, what documentation is involved. There will be elements, I think, that will be common and some elements that will be unique to the two sides, or to each side. But by and large, I think we need to be, considering ourselves as putting together unitary proposals. I see Milton is up in the chat.
Hello, this is Milton Mueller. Can people hear me?
I can.
I can hear you.
Okay, good, thanks. Yes, I just wanted to speak in support of what Greg was saying regarding concerns about fragmentation. I think if we're talking about the real difference between CCTLDs and GTLDs is in the sources of policy. And so then the document that we've been seeing responding to 2A, it would make sense for me for that to be separated into a GTLD section and a CCTLD section, and for perhaps different subgroups to go off and work on those, although I think we have a really great work with the document that's been circulated and that's being shared with us now. What I don't understand is why, when we're talking about the proposal, about the actual structure of the new oversight or the new accountability arrangements, why that would be different for GTLDs and CCTLDs. I just don't understand that. For example, we've been talking about whether the IANA, there should be some kind of a contracting authority, a new contracting authority. Surely both GTLDs and Cs would be represented on that and would have to have a position as to whether they supported that proposal or not. Some people are talking about, do we separate IANA as a separate subsidiary of ICANN. Again, that would be an issue that both entities would have to have support for. So when you're talking about the RFP3 section of this response, I just don't understand why you would want to break off into separate groups.
Thank you, Milton. Before we turn to Stephanie Ducheneau, I would say that I do agree with you. I don't think that the groups should, you know, produce separate proposals on elements like that. I think that the separate policy is a much more there's a more of a bright line between the two sides on that. So I think that, you know, first, I think that what is necessary, and I've seen the suggestion in the chat, is that all the discussions should take place on the RFP3 subgroup mailing list and not on any sort of sub-subgroup mailing list, so that it's all transparent. And I think that what's important is just to have people with their CC or GTLD hats on, you know, contributing as such to the proposal, and if there are elements of the proposals that they think are different or unique or have different emphases, that they will bring that, you know, into the proposal stream, and that those who are kind of putting themselves a little bit forward on this will take on, you know, some more of the burden of not only contributing that in terms of discussion, but contributing it in terms of drafting. Stephanie Ducheneau, please go ahead.
Yeah. Just to shed a bit of light on how the GTLDs have been approaching this, we already have set up a little subgroup of the GTLD registry operators that are participating in the CWG at large to discuss RFP3, but also the other items, and that's been really useful to, you know, kind of hash out the policy sources, the elements that are unique to GTLDs. But in terms of fragmenting the group, I think at this point I would agree with the people that say that having the CCs and the GTLDs working in isolation is only going to get us further from having a single proposal that's a single proposal or a couple of agreed-upon proposals. And I also think that a lot of the things that we're going to be looking for, a lot of the tangibles that we want out of this proposal, such as assurances that IANA is going to be meeting service levels, abiding by relevant policy sources, even if those policy sources are different, are going to be the same, and we should be focusing on working on those together with representation from both sides.
Stephanie, thank you. That's very helpful to know. Eric Iriarte, please go ahead. Eric, if you're speaking, you may be on mute.
Hey, Eric, go ahead and try now. I've unmuted your microphone. Eric, we can't hear you. Perhaps you have your microphone muted on your end.
It looks like Eric may be having some technical difficulties. I see, yes, in the chat he's noted he has trouble with his mic. Well, I think that we've probably dealt with this issue enough for the moment. I'd like to move on to looking at the 2A, 2B, you know, the draft that is on our screen, and look at that in conjunction with our assignment as it is set forth in the RFP. So I think that although it's not the order that's in the RFP, look at first whether we believe there are going to be implications for the existing policy arrangements described in Section 2A. I think if we look at the sources of policy principles and guidelines, we can try to think about whether there are going to be, you know, changes to these And I think that then, you know, becomes part of our what I'll call the variables, the things that we'll need to deal with in our proposal. So the first is RFC 1591. I would tend to think that you know, this document is not going to change, especially not from the names community side. But clearly, I will wait to see if others disagree with that. Next, there is the ICANN bylaws. I suppose it is possible that we could suggest changes to the ICANN bylaws in regard to this. I think it's more likely that the accountability community, cross-community working group may look at issues relating to the ICANN bylaws. But I wouldn't rule out at this point yet potentially recommending changes to the ICANN bylaws. Not saying it's likely, just saying it's possible. And then there's ICP1, which again has been around a long time. I don't think that that would change as such. And section, you know, number D, letter D on the list is the principles for delegation and administration of CCTLDs, which is really a GAC document to clarify rules over CCTLD delegations and redelegations. I don't have an opinion on whether this document would need to be revisited with IANA. Stewardship shifting away from NTIA. Would welcome thoughts from the, especially from the CCTLD or community or GAC members, if they're on here, understanding GAC members would be speaking in their individual capacity and not as members of the GAC on this point. If nobody has any immediate thoughts on it, on this, I think there's at least a question mark about whether this document can stay just as it is under changing circumstances. The GNSO PDP process is next. I don't have a vision at this point that would say to me that we would need to recommend changes to the PDP process. There are certainly enough other opportunities for various changes to the PDP process, and of course there's the GNSO review going on right now. But I think that it's probably going to be more reactive to what our proposals are. So depending upon where our proposals go, it may become apparent to us that some of these policy documents may need to be revisited. To some extent, maybe cart before the horse to be looking at them at this point. So I'll move quickly through the rest. CCNSO PDP, I have the same comment. Principles and Guidelines document from April 2005, it basically supersedes the earlier one. The GNSO PDP manual goes along with the PDP process as something that may need to be changed, but certainly, you know, not expecting that it would be. The new GTLD applicant guidebook, well, that's a source of policy. That can't really be changed per se for the first round. Obviously, for the second round, a lot of things are open to discussion. Not sure to what extent, if any, the IANA stewardship transition would require changes in the guidebook, but I think that's probably, you know, given timing and other things, more or less beyond the scope of this group, and will be in the scope of the PDP process to determine what changes need to be made in the AGB, including those that are driven by changes in roles and creation of possible new bodies and documents and relationships. Next, the IANA functions contract. Clearly, this needs to be changed, or really, rather, it's not going to exist as a living document at the end of the NTIA relationship with the with IANA and ICANN. And one of, I think, our key tasks as a group is going to be to decide or recommend what type of documentation will replace the IANA functions contract. And this is, you know, on our list of variables, and it is definitely a key variable, and I think a critical element of our of any of the proposals that we need to come up with, whether it's a contract or an MOU or an affirmation of commitments or a service level agreement or some combination of the above. There clearly needs to be something in writing that replaces. Clearly, to me, I will not. You know, I'm not coming to any conclusions. Certainly, on behalf of the group, even for myself. But it seems to me that there needs to be something that sets forth in writing the expectation and accountability and recourse for failure of operational excellence and the like that currently all take place within the four corners of the IANA functions contract and its various amendments and exhibits and the like. Last on the list, the framework of interpretation of current policies and guidelines pertaining to the delegation and redelegation of country code TLDs. This is a fresh document. I have to admit, I have not yet read this document. Again, we'll kind of look to the. This is somewhere where the CC subgroup or sub-subgroup or working team, might provide some particular light on what, if anything, needs to be done to this document in light of any particular proposal or proposals that we come up with. If we could scroll all the way down to page 7 of the 2A proposal, it would be helpful. We all have scroll control. Okay. I see Alan Greenberg asks whether we're planning to break for the Net Mundial webinar in 18 minutes. My answer to that is clearly anybody who's on this call who wishes to attend the Net Mundial Initiative webinar is free to break off. I would like to keep going on this call. I think we still have a lot that I would like to cover. And while I haven't double checked, I assume the Net Mundial webinar will be captured for future viewing pleasure. Although obviously, those who would like to know things in real time or need to for the sake of their employment, need to do what they need to do. So looking here at page 7. And actually, the pagination of the one I printed out is a little bit different, so let's go back up to the chart called Under Existing Arrangements. I think that this is a, here it's on page 6, I think that this is an important chart, although obviously a lot of letters and numbers and not immediately descriptive of what's going on, but I think we'll need to make reference to this chart as we go through our proposals, maybe not at the high-level policy end of our proposals, but our proposals are going to have to get down into the details, and I think we'll need to make reference to this to make sure that we are matching up with these existing arrangements as we create new arrangements. Similarly, moving back down to page 7, the delegation redelegation of TTLDs, we have the second to last column under done by shows where the NTIA is active in the process, and you know we'll need to make sure that we deal with that. Lines 2-6 and 2-7 will need to be dealt with in any proposal that we come up with, and also and I think that's about it for that area. On the chart of modification of root zone files for CC and GTLDs, 3-3, verification of compliance with established policies and procedures. That's an IANA and NTIA job. And whoever, you know, whatever oversight function it replaces, that verification of compliance with policy and procedure will be an important part of that oversight function, in my mind. Milton, I see your hand is up again. Milton Mueller, please.
Yes, this is Milton Mueller again, Syracuse University. What I like about the descriptions of the modification of the root zone file is that they are directly showing the relationship between operators and the IANA functions. I think that's very good, and that is specifically what is asked for in the RFP. What I'd like to run by the group again is the idea that the entire Section 2A should be broken down into a GTLD section and a CCTLD section, in which we would describe the sources of policy for GTLDs, and then go into the how the root zone is modified and what functions are actually invoked or executed by IANA for GTLDs, and then have a separate section, basically starting over again, showing the sources of policy for CCTLDs and how they actually get to the point of modifying the root zone file. Now, there are going to be some things that might be ambiguous regarding whether they are sources of policy for either one and whether they span both of them, for example, the IANA contract, and that's something maybe we could have a third section for, but I think the point of this 2A, as far as the overall proposal is concerned, is to just make it clear who the players are that set the policy that then IANA has to respond to and how that actually happens. So there's a tension there between describing very specific acts of policy and getting a grip on the overall process and the actual organizations and players that are involved. I think we want it to be more the latter than the former.
Milton, I think your last point is absolutely critical. I think that sometimes some of us at least feel particularly comfortable discussing policy and policy documents, but ultimately, while policy is important, process, procedure, implementation, and execution are really at the heart of this transition, and we need to we need to be concrete about that aspect of the procedures and proposals that we're coming up with. So definitely put a pin in that concept as we move along and need to revisit it. As to how we split up the Section 2 of the document, I'll leave that to the group that is coordinating that. I think that as we move into Section 3, which is our charge in this subgroup, we can certainly look at organizing things in that fashion. And I think that does make sense, given that there are, to some extent, two streams, obviously, that meet and mingle, but that do act somewhat different on the GTLD side. and the ccTLD side. I think as far as what is in the remainder of this document, I don't think it's necessarily fruitful to take the call to page through the rest of the two-way document. But I do encourage everyone who hasn't already done so to read this in full and you know, thoughtfully, and think about how any of these process steps may change, and whether different dispute resolution process is going to be involved and how we're going to match up with that, and so forth. Milton, is that a new hand?
Yes, it is. I remembered another point I wanted to make, if it's okay.
Please go ahead, Milton.
Yes, Milton Mueller again. One omission that I noticed about dispute resolution is that the independent review process, unless I lost somewhere, is not mentioned in this document. And in some ways, that's been one of the most important dispute resolution procedures. And I wondered if that omission was simply, you know, they got so involved in enumerating all the other details that they forgot about it, or did they think there was some reason that it didn't count as a relevant part of the response? So somebody who was involved could answer that question, it would be good. And if they agree with me that it should be in there, I think there's some pretty easy references to in the bylaws to the IRP and what it is that it could be put in there.
Milton, this is Greg Chatton. I guess my response first is I can't put myself into the head of subgroup 2 and that point. I guess the issue is whether this fit into the development of consent, into the steps that they were looking at, but certainly as part of the overall dispute resolution process system of ICANN, it's a critical part. Bernard, your hand is up.
No, I was just making the point of what I typed in, that that section will be well covered in 2B, but that it was not included in this part, I believe, basically because it wasn't developed as a consensus policy for either the G's or the C's and can apply to a bit of everything. So definitely if people want to put that in as an edit or a comment in 2A, we'll be glad to consider that. But certainly the point is it has not been forgotten.
Right. Good. Well, I guess this is not 2B, so when we see 2B, we'll see how that's dealt with, and I'll try to avoid any allusions to Hamlet. I see a point that Hyun made in the chat about determining if 2-7 can be forgotten going forward. So maybe it does pay to take a look at the chart that's under description of GTLD policy development and implementation process steps. If we, can each scroll or staff can scroll down that list, I think it probably makes sense to jump for the moment to 2-6, verification that process, policy, and technical checks were successfully confirmed. That is certainly part of the IANA function and NTIA, a step that NTIA is involved in. I believe. So that clearly needs to be either replaced, or if it's being abolished, we would need to deal with that. 2-7 is approval of delegation of GTLDs. And whether, you know, conceivably that would be abolished, or whether that is a critical point, and that would need to be approved by some other body or element of the process is important. Delegation, redelegation into the root. Clearly that's critical, but that's not, you know, per se, you know, NTIA. It would be helpful, actually, in this chart to have a better identification of who is doing what. Clearly, NTIA is not updating the root zone per se. They are, I think, doing three. And the next thing that they come up with is 3-3 verification of compliance again. So in each of those cases, the verification and approval, we'll need to consider whether those are replaced by some oversight body or by some other element of second eyes in the process, or just abolished entirely. And I think we can skip, I think, the rest of this. In terms of dispute resolution process, I think we will need to take a look at what changes, if any, need to be made in the dispute resolution processes. I think it's important to determine, you know, where disputes are currently handled. There are in the chart on dispute resolution processes, you know, a number of points at which the NTIA is involved, and the notes state that any disputes would be handled according to the terms of the IANA functions contract. Again, since that is going away, that is going to be something we will need to deal with in our proposal for a replacement of the IANA functions contract with something. There will need to be dispute resolution processes put forward. Whether those exist in that document, whatever that replacement document or documents is, or whether those should become DRPs under ICANN, or perhaps under some, you know, independent body, is something that I think we will need to meet in our discussion. So I think we'll, you know, have to look at all these sections of the IANA contract where disputes, how the IANA contract deals with disputes, and the NTIA's role in those disputes, and how to replace that role going forward in terms of disputes. Does anybody have any other thoughts or comments on the 2A proposal document? I think if there are not, I'd like to move on to what I've called the variables document. Thank you for putting that forward on the screen. My intention here, as we've discussed on the chat, on the email list over time, is really to put out something in the nature of a checklist or a must-have in any proposal, an element that deals with each of these. And, you know, as indicated, I think this is a first draft, but I think that as we draft proposals, we'll want to check those proposals against this list. I'd also like this list to be a living document. So to review it on this call and decide whether I'd like to talk about two items look at this in two ways. One is in terms of prioritization. And the second is to identify any missing elements or at the kind of letter level, if you will, or missing sub-elements under each or any of the letters. And then I think we may want to reorganize this a bit so that they come in level of priority. I think, you know, mindful of the time, or rather the lack of time that we have to deal with things, we need to look at things, I think, in priority order. So starting in the upper left-hand corner, we have the status of oversight body. Maybe this is presumes too much in that it presumes that there will be an oversight body. But unless there are people who believe or are thinking about proposals where there would be no oversight body at all, I think this is a fair place to start. So if anybody has any thoughts on that, certainly you bring them up now on the call, in the chat, or in the in the email list. We've lost Milton, or we're losing him, and we may lose Alan Greenberg as well, I think, or maybe he'll choose to stay with us. So under status of the oversight body, or really kind of what the oversight body would look like, there's been the Operational Performance Review Committee, which may or may not be a legal entity, a separate legal entity, ICANN, some sort of a cross-community advisory group that kind of lives within ICANN, or some other thing. There may be a few other initials that have floated around for things, but I don't know that they are separate from these essentially three concepts. But we can, we can make changes. I'm going to put this document up in Google Docs after this call, and we can then make changes to that as need be. So next, and I think an area where we've had some robust discussion, don't necessarily expect to resolve it, on this call, but I think we do need to resolve it, is the composition of the oversight body. There have been a number of suggestions that the oversight body should be composed solely of registry operators. And others have suggested it needs to be a more multi-stakeholder group. Some concerns have been raised about whether the non-registry operators will bring anything to the party technically, and whether they would be interested in being involved. And there have been responses from other stakeholders that, yes, they're interested, and, yes, they can do more than plug in a lamp. And then third, I think there's been some suggestion of some sort of more of an independent third-party type of oversight body that is not directly tied to stakeholder groups.
Hey, Greg?
Yes.
Grace, you have a hand up in the Adobe Connect room. I'm not sure if you've seen it.
Thank you, Grace. No, I did not. Amr El-Sadr, please speak.
Thanks, Greg. This is Amr. I did raise my hand when you first asked whether folks are necessarily in agreement of oversight, per se, being the term we use here. I am of a mind that oversight is possibly not the best sort of principle we want to introduce here. And although I think that a lot of the functional characteristics of the items listed in each one of the boxes in this table is they sound pretty reasonable, I think that if you replace oversight with another concept it might change the context entirely of how this could be done. I am more in favor of something like a contracting authority and overseeing contractual compliance in terms of enforcing accountability, as opposed to oversight. I'm not opposed to a multi-stakeholder composition of a contracting authority for the IANA function or the IANA operator, but I think oversight is, as a word, just seems to me to be very closely linked to policy development and accountability issues relating to that, as opposed to simply carrying out what would be agreed to in terms of provision of a service, such as IANA does. I think that there could be mechanisms put in place where feedback by the IANA clients or customers will initiate a process where a contracting authority will be able to address whether the operator is carrying out the duties as they are contracted to do or not. But still, I'm just a bit uncomfortable with oversight in the context of the role that would be played under each of these items if we do continue down this path. Thanks. Oh, I'd also like to mention that this document is already up on Google Docs. So I was just going to ask that we allow comments to be made directly to it, and that might be helpful moving forward. Thanks.
Greg, we also have a hand up from Robert Darrow.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you. Before we get to Robert, Amr, I guess I'd like to get a little bit more of an understanding of your concern about oversight. So in your mind, what is and isn't oversight? To my mind, oversight is a fairly broad term that can involve overseeing technical functions. It's not a purely policy term. But I guess maybe we're getting, I don't want to get bogged down in semantics, but at the same time, if there is a concern about oversight implying a particular function or approach, I'd like to understand what that concern is.
Hi, Greg. This is Amr. Actually, you in a way answered your own question when you said that oversight is concerning some of the technical operations. And if we do want a sort of multi-stakeholder approach to this technical oversight, I'm not sure how that would be done. I would think that this sort of technical oversight is probably best done by the customers themselves. And so I would leave that similarly to the way any service provider provides a service to their customers. There's a sort of feedback mechanism. You can open up, for example, tickets. We have complaints about how certain services are being provided or suggestions for improvements. Then you have a contracting authority that doesn't get into the actual overseeing of the technical provision, but sort of just revises what the needs of the customers are and how the contract is being met or needs to be amended in order to allow for these services to be provided in a better fashion. But when you say a multi-stakeholder oversight body or council is doing the actual technical oversight of the service being provided, I just don't understand how that would happen. I can see how it could be done by, for example, the CC and GTLD registers that are the customers, but I'm thinking about others who are not within those two groups. How would they actually perform this oversight? And it just seems a bit confusing to me. So that's why I'm more in favor of oversight being done by the direct customers than providing their feedback and this going back. It could all be very transparent and very accountable, but eventually would go back to a contracting authority that sort of tries to align all the concerns being raised. Does that help at all, Greg?
Might be muted.
All right. Thank you, Amr. I think that Maybe we're looking at the words word oversight still in different ways, and I think that something like a service level issue or a ticket is likely to be dealt with on a one-to-one basis between a particular customer and the whoever is performing the function. Let's say the IANA group. Then oversight involves more of a taking an overview on how the process and overall performance across many one-to-one relationships is taking place. So I think that it is a higher level and not a one that necessarily gets involved in any particular failure or moment where a particular customer of the IANA function feels that they have an issue. And I do think that can be and should be done by a combination of affected customers and other members of the stakeholder community. Robert, I will turn to you.
Sure. A couple of my points have been said, but I'll just try to summarize them. I think there's a slight semantic issue around oversight, and so whether we want to put it in quotes or brackets right now, but I think we're talking about the same thing. I think what's important from the earlier conversation is that there is a technical administrative policy review step that NTIA does. In a sense, it's kind of the last chance step, which I think that if we are moving IANA out, we may want to discuss whether we want to eliminate that step. I think it might be positive to have that step because that way it would be basically checking on a due diligence process, whether it's a secondary person or something like that. But it is a technical administrative role, which isn't necessarily oversight. So that's one thing to consider. I think secondly is in terms of the oversight body, we might want that to be the reviewer of the service level agreements and something to do with when appeals or there's some issues that come to mind. And I'll finish with another point, which is more focused on B. The way B is really being developed, is almost going with option that it stay within ICANN, and some have discussed on the list, on the larger list and others, that it may be something that stays within ICANN, but it should be maybe constructed in a way that could be portable and moved elsewhere. And so we may want to think of language that basically says that it calls on the Internet governance community, such as ICANN and others, to identify individuals, and they could be drawn from registry operators, other stakeholders. I think it's very important to have independent third parties there. And so it's just that, we're building B assuming that it's very closely linked to ICANN. We may want some more general language that could be helpful if this moves out in the future outside of ICANN. So that's just something to consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Before moving on to Sean, I would just say that I think that is more maybe a drafting glitch on my part. Was not intending to imply that it would be a within ICANN element, which would be kind of A3 in the chart. So I think we can tweak that so it is. Not necessarily, tilting toward an ICANN internal operation. And indeed, my thinking has tended to be that there needs to be some sort of a oversight. Let's put that in quotes for the moment, a quote unquote oversight body that would be independent of ICANN and sit outside it and probably be a separate legal entity. Not to get down into the discussion of entity yet. Sion.
Okay, thank you. This is Sion for the transcript record. So I think we need to, in order to continue, we perhaps need to clarify what the oversight role means in respect to what NTIA is doing. From my own understanding, and I'm willing to be corrected, I'm open to be corrected, the oversight that NTIA is having are all checked in the contracts. That's what they use in actually checking whether ICANN is doing operating the functions the right way or not. And I think some of these things, some of these items within the contract can actually be transferred to the community. The community indirectly have been having some level of oversight, just as the oversight may not have been recognized because they are not the one that they have not been empowered to do so indirectly, in quotes. So I think the oversight, yes, should be transferred, could be transferred to the ICANN community. I don't see how a body external to ICANN would be doing, would do that better than the community within. I think empowering the community in a way such that there may be an external body, existing body, that could sign, if you want to call it a contract or an agreement, with ICANN, indicating that the community would carry out, and besides, all the oversight things are actually going to be in response, in relation to two things. Policy, does whether ICANN has actually implemented according to the policy, or whether what is being added to the rules is the right thing that is expected. These are the two basic things. Policy is already doing its own, and the other aspect is what everybody would see if it gets wrong. So I think we shouldn't try to convert everything that NTIA is doing right now into a body per se. We should try and see how we could. Multi-stakeholder is great. In support of multi-stakeholder, but we shouldn't mix it. We should understand some realities when it comes to forming a multi-stakeholder body outside of ICANN. We already have something within ICANN, and as much as possible that we could transfer those functions of NTIA to the multi-stakeholder body, the better for us. I'm in support of oversight mechanisms transferred to the community within ICANN by an external body doing the contracting and empowering the community to follow up with the ICANN body in any implementation. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. Two quick points. I think it was Robert who said there's maybe a semantics problem here, and I think there is. The word oversight means different things to different people, and therefore we're reading different implementations into it, and I think we need to be much more specific on what we mean by it, and we may well find we mean two different things, and there's two different solutions to the two aspects, and I'm not trying to do an actual design right now. The other thing is the reference to whether any of these levels of oversight can be done just by the registries. And I'll point out that policy is set by a multi-stakeholder group. That has an implication that in any given policy, the customers, the registries, may not be agreed with something. Policy may be set against what the registries would prefer, and therefore having the registries be the only audit mechanism to verify that policies are being followed is a really dangerous game, because they may be in favor of a specific policy not being followed. And I'm not pointing fingers at any given registry, but the nature that policy is set by a multi-stakeholder group implies that there may be a difference of opinion on this, and therefore oversight must be done by essentially the same or a similar group to that which sets policy. And I think if we're looking at the various numbers aspects, they're talking about an oversight process that, in fact, is done by the policy-setting group. And I don't think we can ignore it here. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. With my coordinator hat off, I agree with what you're saying. With my coordinator hat back on, I call on Stephanie Ducheneau.
Thank you, and I'm glad I get a response. So I think that it's not just that the term oversight is bad. I think it's actually three different things that we're talking about here, all of which have to be addressed in different ways. On the one hand, there is this SLA question. Is IANA operating in accordance with the technical standards, the time-based standards that have been set for it? And I think, and maybe I'm speaking a bit prematurely, but I think that is what the registry community had been saying should be comprised of CCTLD and GTLD operators. It's that SLA question. Is this being met, and what do we do if it's not? There's also two other important mechanisms. On the one hand, there's also this certification before something is actually delegated. And right now, at least for GTLDs, IANA is producing the report, and I imagine, and I know we're going to the NTIA for more clarity on this, but the NTIA's role is partly certifying this delegation report. And I know that the discussion is still open about whether or not this is a necessary step. I tend to think that it is, but I don't think, and from our internal discussion, this isn't a step that the registries wanted to fill in and of themselves. I also don't think that it should be a new multi-stakeholder body that is constituted for it, but I know what we had been floating before was having some sort of independent panel or independent panelist that can be called upon for this role. Still has to be fleshed out a lot. And then there's a third aspect, which is the policy question. It's having an appeal process in place if you believe that the IANA function is being executed in a way that goes against the relevant policy sources, whether that be the GTLD policy sources or the CCTLD policy sources. And I don't think that's what the registry operators believe that they should have sole control over either. That appeals process, I think if IANA is staying within ICANN, can stay within ICANN. Otherwise, it needs to be independently constituted. But I think there's three different things at play, three different things that need to be handled separately. And I think what, for the most part, registries were interested in having as a GTLD and a CCTLD comprised body was referring specifically to this question of service levels, not to the policy question at hand.
Thank you, Stephanie. I think that breakdown is very helpful, and I think it's something we can definitely should, you know, keep an eye on and make an active part of our discussions about roles and responsibilities. Cheryl Langdon-Orr, please.
Thank you, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, for the record. And I'm glad I'm coming in after Stephanie because I think that breakdown has been particularly useful for the very brief point I wanted to make, which I started wanting to make with in response to something Amir first raised and to some extent Sean also alluded to. And that was just a perspective I wanted to bring in terms of modelling. I certainly think that and how to describe it as a multi-stakeholder aspect is important in the composition of the body we are referring to, regardless of which of the three types or three places we're looking at under Stephanie's very nice dissection there. But I do think there are models that we can look at which will give some comfort to those of us used to the more full-blown multi-stakeholder modelling out of ICANN, out of, for example, telco industry, which would sit comfortably with both compliance, contract and audit aspects. Let me give you some very brief examples, and that is where it is not uncommon in the telco world that I am often a advocate in to have beyond industry representation in the ultimate authority that is contracting running audit or is involved in the ultimate aspects of compliance for those particular aspects. In some cases, they may be approved of or appointed by even the contracting authority, and in some cases, they may be somehow more democratically provided, but it is not uncommon for them to be there, even in what is traditionally seen, I guess, as what would be, in our modelling, a more pure the client of IANA world. So I don't think we need to die in a ditch over any of this. I just think that there are ways whereby aspects of multi-stakeholderism can be woven into it regardless. Thank you, Greg.
Carol, thank you. That's very helpful. Olivier Crapin-Leblond.
Thanks very much, Greg. It's Olivier speaking. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Fantastic. Just hearing all of the different people that have participated today, it looks as though we really have three big bullion questions. Effectively, the question of oversight body, yes or no, whether any oversight body, if this is a yes, would be in ICANN or outside of ICANN, and thirdly, what the composition of any oversight body would be. I would suggest perhaps that we put together a table of advantages and inconveniences for each one of these. So advantages and inconvenience of an oversight body, advantages and inconvenience of having it in ICANN or outside ICANN, and also advantages and inconvenience with the different types of composition of the oversight body. The proper appeals mechanism and the jurisdiction and all that are things that can come later, but as a first step, I would suggest that. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. We have an earlier version of that, a sort of pros and cons document that was prepared largely by Alan McGillivray, which I circulated last week, but I think we need to return to that and keep looking at that, because that obviously is critical in terms of elements of analyzing these elements, and I agree that those are, you know, particularly critical points. I see we're down to the last 3 minutes or so. I see, and the screen now shows the pros and cons document, although this was, you know, limited, this page at least is limited to another subject which has been discussed, you know, which is where IANA should sit now and potentially in the future. But that this sort of format I think we can use for the questions at hand. And given the shortness of time, I would just, you know, note briefly back on the variables document, the last couple of the few boxes that I have here, and the documentation of the oversight relationship, or whatever relationship we want to call it. Maybe it does break down, as Stephanie points out, into multiple relationships that might not all be taken care of by the same body or entity or person or thing. Have I lost the call? Hello?
Greg, you're
still here.
Call.
I'm here. Okay, so somebody else lost the call.
I'll look into it.
Thanks. That's moving quickly through the rest of the chart. Set D, the status of the IANA function operator, which is something that was just up on that pros and cons document. That's something which we certainly should be looking at. And under that is probably the question of jurisdiction, which took a lot of time on the chat or on the email list yesterday, but which frankly I think is a second-level issue, which we shouldn't get bogged down in. I think there are a lot of reasons why people are attracted to that issue, but I think it's not one. It's one that we should reach second or third level of our task, and not deal with it first.
The method of oversight, which is also goes back to what to the responsibilities of the oversight body, is listed on the Appendix A because the list is too long to fit into this chart, but basically goes to what would be done. And I think we, again, can compare that to, I'll call them Stephanie's categories, to see how they might fit together. Consequences of failure to perform, or I think Milton may have used on the email list the word redress, or maybe somebody else did. But the point is, where are the teeth? What can this oversight body or some other body or entity or thing do when things, go wrong, whether it's a little bit wrong or a lot wrong? Next is funding. Clearly, if any of these bodies are outside of ICANN in any way, shape, or form, funding will need to be done in at least a slightly different way than it's currently handled now. Transparency of decision-making is obviously an important part of the multi-stakeholder model or of any good governance model, and we'll need to be dealing with that. And policy appeal mechanism, and I would add to that or make perhaps a separate square for a dispute mechanism, but I think it's basically the same thing. And clearly, if there's anything other than these that needs to be dealt with, a kind of a must-have, we should discuss them. But I think that dealing with what type of body or bodies would be involved in replacing the IANA, the NTIA oversight and stewardship and action functions, we'll need to talk about them, and some composition and documentation, I think, are really the most critical elements here, and we should be focusing on those first, I think, going forward. Not that the other ones are ones that can be left out. So I think that in terms of moving on from here, and being it's 10:31 and we're basically out of time, I think that in terms of next steps, would like to see discussion continue on the discussion list, but I think we also need to begin to move, and I will take kind of the first crack at something that might start to look like an actual deliverable. I think that the RFP 2A document is looking an awful lot like an actual deliverable. And I think that we can begin doing that by using these categories on this variables document, but obviously arranging the documents is a little bit different. So in terms of next steps, I am not thinking that we would have another call between now and the full group meeting a week from today, but that rather we would try to be as active on the email list as possible. Certainly if we have a call a week from today with the full group, and then on Tuesday of the following week, people will start flying to we'll fly out Monday night to Frankfurt, we're not going to have a lot of time to deal with a document. So I think we need to move, even as we're kind of looking at these variables and the like, into actually preparing a document that begins to look like a proposal or perhaps a set of potential proposals. But look for input from everyone who's on the call, and especially those who have stepped a half a step forward to work on documentation. Encourage everyone to continue to discuss all the things that are being discussed, but to be very mindful, I think, of priorities. So discussions like jurisdiction, whether IANA should be in California, is really, if that's all we deal with between now and next week's call, then we're going to have nothing done at all, really. So my closing remarks. Olivier, is that a new hand or an old hand? I'll take it as an old hand. My closing remarks are that we should all stay very active on the email list, and that, you know, really try to, you know, work on not just questions and answers type of emails, but on actually pushing forward on a document. It may be rough and ready. It may be full of more questions than answers, but I think as this begins to take shape, our task will be clearer. And so in any case, I'd like to thank you all for participating, and that I will see you all on the email list and on next week's call and in person in Frankfurt. Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Yeah. I think we can stop the recording now.
Thank you. This completes today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.